All lines are now bridged.
All right, thank you, and good morning, everybody, and welcome to the USDDI Task Force. I'm Mike Berry, I'm with ONC, and we are starting phase two of the task force today, and on behalf of ONC, I want to thank Leslie and Stephen and all the task force members, and especially Al Taylor as well from ONC, for all their hard work in getting us through phase one. It's greatly appreciated, and as everybody knows, the HITAC voted unanimously to accept the recommendations from the task force, which are currently being transmitted to the national coordinator. And I'm sure Stephen and Leslie will talk about that more in a minute. So let's open up the meeting, and I'll call roll, starting with our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
I am here. Good morning.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
I'm here. Hi.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Hans Budendijk.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Gergis. Ken Kawamoto. John Kilbourne.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber from CMS has a conflict, so she won't be with us today. Abby Sears. Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott. Cheryl Turney. Dan Vreeman.
Good morning.
And, good morning. And Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Good morning to all, and I'll turn it over to our co-chair, Stephen and Leslie. Take it away.
Thank you so much, Mike. And I did hear from Andy that he had a conflict as well. And Denise told us before we went public that she needs to take out the middle half hour to do something else. So wanted to make sure we got that down. Also, if or when Abby Sears joins us, we'll give her a chance to introduce herself, but Abby is the CEO at OCHIN and is a member of the HITAC, a fairly recent addition to the HITAC. She had a number of comments to share when we presented our recommendations the other day, and she popped right up and said she'd love to join the task force for the next phase of our work, so she will be joining us. So excited for that. And I understand Dr. Kawamoto has joined us, which is awesome. All right. So thank you again, Mike and the ONC team, for all of your help getting us to this point. I do want to remind everyone, just so that we don't forget, that the April 15 date when we made our recommendations to HITAC was also the date that the public comment period for draft version 2 closed. So all of the comments that came in over the past few months, both from the public and from the HITAC, will be considered by ONC as they put together the final version 2. I don't know, Al, do you want to say a bit about that process, just so we understand how that's going to go forward?
Sure. Thanks, Stephen. So as Stephen mentioned, all of the public comments, including the HITAC recommendations, are in, and the public comment period is closed now. ONC is working on evaluating all of the recommendations and comments that have come in, breaking them down by the different data classes, and also how they identify different priorities according to the submissions. These comments include supplemental information from the submitters, as well as public comments on other submissions. And so we're going to take those all as a whole, look at the weights and the value of each of the comments, and see how those are going to inform our final decisions on what's going to go into USDDI version 2. Although the comment period for the version 2 draft is closed, the comment system and the submission system continue to be open And we will continue to accept both submissions and comments. And all of those that are contributed as of last Thursday will be considered for the next cycle of USCDI version 3. The end of the submission period for version 3 will be sometime in September of this year, but anything that comes in between now and then will be considered for version 3. We also plan on publishing our final version 2 in July, and at the same time we're going to be publishing what ONC is setting as its priorities for selecting among the level 2 data elements that will be considered for version 3, just like we considered a list of level 2 data elements for version 3 as well. So we'll publish our around the same time. I can't promise it's going to be the exact same date, but we'd like to try and make it that way. We'll publish what we consider to be our any updates to the evaluation criteria and any updates to the prioritization criteria that we use to select from those level 2 data elements. I think that's what I needed to cover, Stephen.
Great. Thank you. And we see that Abby Sears has indeed joined us. Abby, are you on audio?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. I did you a poor man's introduction at the front end of the meeting, but I did promise that you might say a few words about your interest in the task force, and perhaps if there was anything that you wanted to share as a HITAC member with regard to comments on the recommendations that we brought forward on the 15th, this might be a good time to do that.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. First of all, I'm particularly interested in this committee for a couple of reasons. One, we work with some of the most at-risk patients in the country, and we move a lot of data. We're lucky enough to get to pilot lots of different interactions and exchanges of data, whether it's closed-loop referrals or the electronic case reporting nationally. So we have a lot of unique perspective related to our patient population, one from an equity standpoint, and two, what some of the challenges are of moving their data and of understanding their data. And I think we have a plethora of social determinants of health data and have had that data in a longitudinal way for many years. So we have a lot of experience related to what we're finding to be most useful related to that data. We also are also in, I think, 40 states. And so every state, and because a lot of our patients are covered by Medicaid or some sort of public insurance of some sort, every state is designing and doing their own version of trying to capture information for really good reasons around understanding how best to use the money they're investing in Medicaid. But without having stronger standards, it's very expensive and it's very challenging to change the way we're capturing data in all of those different states. And so I think one of the things we really want to relay on this committee and on this task force is to really talk about that data. And the second thing is to really talk about the movement of our data related to labs, especially because we have 60% of our patient population has chronic diseases, and another 50% of that has severe mental health issues. So we just have really significant diagnostic information that really needs to move. We're big advocates in the alcohol and drug treatment, moving alcohol and drug treatment data to HIPAA, because we had 3 examples of deaths related to that data not being available in emergency rooms. So I have a lot. I'm trying to distill it really fast and share it as quickly as I can, but I'm picking out the high points, but there's a lot that we want to share and help communicate and help help from a process standpoint, make sure that these patients are brought forward at just like the commercial population. So thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Abby, for making the time. I see that a number of members of the public have joined us. Welcome to all of you, and also that Clem McDonald has joined. Thank you so much. We did jump over, with regard to past meeting notes, there are a couple of sets of notes that are actually on my plate to finish reviewing and get posted, so we're a little behind on those, but hopefully we'll have those up there soon. And I also wanted to say that, you know, we've asked a number of questions of Al and the ONC team about the general scope and purpose of USCDI as we move into future phases, as the focus of information blocking is going to be moving forward over time, et cetera, this whole question of what is core and where things are going. And I think that you know, we were waiting some time after Mickey Tripathi took his new role at ONC for the team to be able to get together with him and talk about USCDI. My understanding, Al, is that happened last week. Is that right?
We had our first, not our first briefing with Mickey last week. Yes, that's right.
Perfect. All right. So, and I think, and I've reached out to the ONC team and said that the task force is really interested in getting a broad view of what the intentions are, because I think as we move into our phase two work, it's important for us to know what are the guardrails. I really believe that we, our role should be to do the bidding of HITECH and ONC and bring forward the input that they're looking for, and that if we spend a lot of time working on things that they're not interested in, we're just spending a lot of time to less value. So we actually are scheduling a meeting with Mickey and Al and Steve and the team there, I hope for later this week. I think it's been calendared yet, but I think a lot of these questions about the intended direction and the desired input, we'll have a chance to discuss them there. So looking forward to that. I also wanted to share that one of the things that Leslie specifically included in our presentation to the HITECH was a question to that group as to whether they were prepared to weigh in terms of stakeholder prioritization. You know, were there specific stakeholder categories that they felt should be prioritized, or that there might be a need for specific outreach? And there really wasn't a strong feeling that I got from the HITECH, and I don't know, Denise, you might be able to weigh in as well on this, but I think that the HITECH felt that we were going in a good direction, that we had a lot of good stakeholder representation here, and that the various stakeholder categories have been well-defined, for example, in the draft TESCA, et cetera. So, Leslie, did you want to comment at all on that issue of stakeholder outreach or prioritization?
You know, we did not get clear direction, although I would like to thank Abby for many of her comments about supporting this patient and SDOH, and we heard her loud and clear and love to have your participation in this committee. I do think that we had a great conversation, and it was wonderful to have a unanimous vote. And I see that Denise has a comment, as does Mark. Denise?
Hi. This is Denise. I was just going to agree with you, Leslie, and also with Steve's sentiments as well. But I think when you presented or posed the question to the committee, it's possible that folks didn't really take the time to absorb it and really think about it. Some folks were probably ready to express what they thought, but not the majority. So I didn't see any real opposition to what we're doing on the task force in terms of stakeholder groups, but I would have to agree with you, Leslie, that the question was not really directly addressed by the committee members.
And I think that as we go through our suggestions on process, that when we do go back to high tech with that, it's worthwhile, I think, to offer our opinion and seek feedback from there as well.
That's
we have
a
comment
approach.
From Mark. Okay, super. Thank you, Denise.
So, Leslie, my comment goes back to something Al said. So I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time, but if it is, I'm happy to jump in with it.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I may have misunderstood, but I thought I heard Al say that that in July, when ONC publishes USCDI version 2, they were also publishing their prioritization criteria for V3. And I may not be connecting the dots quite well, but I thought we were actually trying to come up with some recommendations in September around prioritization. And so I'm just checking about the alignment of those, whether we are supposed to be doing something earlier, or maybe I just misunderstood.
Yeah, just to be clear, Mark, and perhaps we can go to slide 5, which really describes our phase 2 work. We got a typo at the top here. But, you know, our phase 1 was really focused on task 1. And now we're looking at tasks 2 and 3. And I think that what we've discussed here is that there is an opportunity for the task force to provide input on the prioritization process used by ONC that they will use for the next cycle, for the V3 cycle. So I think this slide, I think, is getting a little out of date as we continue to refine our thinking. And Al, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what we've learned from Al is that we do have an opportunity to provide input on prioritization in time for it to be included in the prioritization document that will be republished in July along with level 2. Al, can you either challenge or verify that?
No, that's right, Stephen. So kind of directly to Mark's question, we were considering moving it up just to so that because if the recommendations are not delivered until September, that particular recommendation for priorities isn't delivered until September, it may be a little too late to affect our giving guidance to those who might submit over the summer.
And as part of that, Al and the team at ONC are working to develop a document that we've asked them for, which really does a better job clarifying the role of USCDI in the ecosystem and in ONC's work, because again, that's been such a persistent question that we've had here as well as others. And Al is working on that. My understanding, Al, is that you really aren't far enough along to say, you know, what the details of that are. But again, that document about the intended role and scope of USCDI, as well as the document regarding the prioritization criteria that will be used for evaluating V3 submissions, are both anticipated in July.
That's right. And we're likely to publish that in a new version of our standards bulletin, which is a periodical that we put out on various standards initiatives at ONC. So we expect that that's going to be the vehicle for delivering those things around the same time as we publish the version 2 final.
So that really is going to set our schedule now as we enter into our phase 2 work. Again, my thought, and any of you are welcome to provide others, is that we should start with our CAST 2C. Start thinking about the prioritization process that's used to select from amongst the submitted data classes that are ready for elevation into a future version. And then we can, once we have that done and packaged up and ready for us to present to HITAC, probably in the June timeframe, so that HITAC can comment on it, and then that can get back from HITAC to the ONC team in time to inform their July publication date. And then once we finish 2C, then I think focusing back in on 2A, 2B, and finally item 3, which is really our going back to our initial submissions, you'll recall there were a number of items that people brought forward that we said we needed to hold on to because those will be version 3 suggestions. And I think we, for September, will be able to provide the HITACH with input more on 2A, 3. 2B is sort of in between. I think in a sense, 2B and 2C are related. That is to say, what are the criteria for selecting a level, and then how is prioritization done? So I don't see a bright line between 2B and 2C, and I anticipate that our discussion here today and going forward will cover both of them. Is that all good with you, Al?
That sounds great.
Okay. Mark, did that answer the question?
Yes, we should see that September date there as being something earlier. That helps me very much. Thank you.
Yeah,
it's just that was the due date that we set because it's around the same time. It's close to the time of the cutoff for submissions for version 3. It doesn't mean that the task force and the HITACH can't deliver it sooner.
And I think it is important that we get clear about when exactly we need to have our recommendations in. I'm trying to see when. There's a HITACH meeting on June 9, and there's a HITACH meeting on July 14 that I'm not going to be able to make. So, and since you're talking about publishing in July, Al, it seems like the June 9 HITACH meeting is really when we need to bring forward our task 2C recommendations. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think that time frame would allow those recommendations to have the greatest impact.
Which really means that we have a fairly short time frame for this. All right. So what I'd like to do then is remind everyone what the current prioritization criteria are. The ones that ONC published and has used for prioritizing the V2 submissions. And you all got that with your homework. So I'll just voice over here. Specifically, it included only level 2 data elements. And we've had some back and forth here in the discussion of Clem's favorite element of ocular tonometry. It's not for us to move things between levels, but we do have an opportunity to weigh in on the criteria that are used to assign levels, and I'm sure we'll do that. But it was a level 2 data element that it was identified as having been a significant gap in the prior version, which I think obviously anyone could weigh in on, that this is really, it's missing, it's needed, supported by ONC certification. What's supported by means, I think, could be a little fuzzy, whether that means it's required by certification or it's consistent with certification, I'm not sure, but it was supported by modest technical standards development. We've certainly spent a lot of time talking about that and implementation guides that are in process but not finalized, and modest aggregate lists for vendors to develop and for users to implement in the context of the pandemic. So those are the current existing prioritization criteria, and that's what we are going to spend the next couple of weeks, probably at least, evaluating and seeing if we want to make some changes or suggest, I should say, making some changes in those for the next cycle. All right. Grace, your hand is up.
Yes, as I'm going through and listening to this, I wanted to ask if it would make sense where we are in today's world, where we're in some of the population is post-vaccination, some of the population has recovered from COVID, some of the population is struggling with long-term complications from COVID, and eventually, hopefully, we'll be in a post-pandemic phase. As we think about prioritization criteria, should we be thinking of looking through that lens of this world that we're in on what data is going to be most important for patients and the rest of the ecosystem to get us through this public health crisis?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think that kind of goes without saying that, you know, that these criteria exist at a moment in time and that the criteria that were established for evaluating the V2 submissions are likely going to be somewhat different than the criteria used to evaluate V3, and I imagine that the criteria used to evaluate V4 will be different yet again. I see this as a dynamic process, and I think that our focus when we're looking at the criteria should be on right now. What should be the criteria right now? And not assuming that whatever we recommend now will necessarily be appropriate a year from now, when I hope that at least some of us will be here again having the same conversation, but this should be a dynamic process.
Stephen,
I think that there's definitely room for adjustment in these priorities over time. So yeah, I agree. And I agree that I hope a lot of you or all of you will be around in 2 years.
Sorry, Grace.
And Grace, okay. I think that that it is incumbent upon us, as Stephen just said, to do the here and the now and the conditions that we have today as part of our due diligence and part of our reference. And I think as we go through the day, Mark's going to talk to us about what we did and present some of the ideas that I think will get to your point.
My question was, how do you balance then things, data points that may be essential or data classes and elements that may be essential that don't have standards? I feel that seems to be a limiting factor. And the pushback is that, well, there's no standards in place, but this is a very crucial component. Is there some comments on that?
Yeah, so Grace, to be clear, the criteria was modest technical standards development. It does not say that there must be standards. It doesn't say that there must be implementation guides. And I think we've discussed at some length data classes and elements that are not supported by robust standards or implementation guides. I think some we've felt really require those and that it would be a prerequisite for moving them into the next version, and hence the anticipated discussion with HL7 and ONC on that Andy's helping us to coordinate. But yeah, I don't think there's anything here, and Alec, again, correct me if I'm wrong, there's nothing here that says there must be strict technical or implementation standards to support an element coming forward.
I don't think that's 100% right, because we do set the standards for determining something to be level 2, and that is being represented by, you know, at least a terminology standard or at least an implementation guide. Having it be in an implementation guide doesn't necessarily mean it's represented by one of the terminologies, but at least it gives a good idea for users and even developers about how to implement one of these new data elements. So it needs to be represented. It needs to be usable and usable through the use of standards or implementation guides.
That when SDOH was put in V1, we didn't have the standards developed, and that work that's been largely done in the Gravity project and UCSF's work has really driven standards to be ready for that use. And so there is that kind of yin and yang that has to happen, but we do have precedent that showed where we have presented data elements and then developed the standards. So I understand there's a tension here, and I just think it's worth discussing as we make our recommendations for change in prioritization and such, if that's possible. And I see Clem has a comment too.
Well, I'd just like to say a couple things. Firstly, there's a lot of acceptance of narrative content, so that opens the door. If one can say what it is, the challenge with saying no standards whatsoever is it can be gibberish. You know, it's like babble, and nobody can use it. So there's sort of that's where the tension comes in. If you don't have some some agreed upon how you do it and say it, who can do anything with it electronically. But the narrative, it's been fairly wide open to a lot of narrative content, like various kinds of reports. So that's the escape hatch, I think. But still, there would have to be some way to ship it. And there is a way to ship a lot of narrative reports already.
Right. And Clem, you've made the point in the past that there's data that's being exchanged today that could be considered for addition. And I wanted to emphasize what Al said was from the submission evaluation criteria slide that you've all received, that for an item to make it to level two, it says it must, underlined, be represented using a terminology standard or an element of an SDO balloted technical spec. So I think that's the criterion that we're meeting. And I think, Grace, again, your point is that there might be things out there that would be valuable, but that it, I guess the feeling is that it's not going to make it over the line to be, quote, core or included in USCDI unless it's actually exchangeable based on that level of technical maturity.
So if I could add just a comment. So that the other dimension is that there's a whole pile of opportunities that we have, and we can't do them all at once. And so the stuff that's really ripe, you know, just is kind of trying to get out the door, should probably get a little priority over the stuff that still has to be figured out. But this is also should motivate people who have content that they think is important to get it into a format that it could be shared and reused by others.
Yes, and that's exactly, you know, as we said, that's the work that Gravity and others have been advocating, moving these technical specs and implementation guides forward. And as we saw, a number of SDOH-related data elements made it to level two, and we could then include in our recommendations, and many more are in the hopper back at level one and at the comment level. So what we wanted to do at this point is ask Mark to share some information that he prepared, which really looks at, I think, stepping back, looking at the large view of USCDI and where it is and could be going, and then talking a bit about experience that he had working on an earlier work group under ONC that tackled a different challenge but came up with a prioritization schema that we thought might be helpful to inform our process going forward.
Great. Thanks so much, Stephen and Leslie. Next slide.
Actually, yeah, the other slide deck. There we go.
So in addition to criteria that we've seen from ONC and the different points of view that members of this task force have brought forward, I and we at UCSF have also thought about some other ways of looking at USCDI, and this is a slide that I developed a while ago to sort of illustrate how any particular data element actually serves a lot of national needs, just to remind myself, to remind ourselves about how important these things can be for different use cases. So not just care, but especially from a UCSF perspective, might be the thing that goes into research. We know from Michelle Schreiber, it goes into digital quality measures. These can be the elements that help us identify health equity and disparities. So I'm thinking of the, for example, the sexual orientation and gender identity data elements that we recommended. Those are for care, but they are also for identifying disparities. Shared care planning. So the recommendations we made about care team members, this is the kind of thing that enables a huge use case, and by bringing in patients, value-based care delivery as well, because you're starting to shift the curve to earlier points in the care delivery cycle. So not that any one of these is the answer, but just a reminder about how important USCDI is to all of the use cases that we're facing now. And this illustrates Grace's point about COVID-19. That's one of the things that we're seeing clearly that COVID-19 is amplifying our appreciation of that need. So going to the next slide, please. So from a UCSF perspective, when we were commenting on the first round of comments, trying to think about what should go into version 2, we stepped back and we looked at some strategic priorities that we thought applied not just for us, but also sort of nationally. And so I'm repeating that slide here. Again, I think we came more from a perspective of what's the need within the healthcare system. So there is a need for some elements in order to deliver better care, elements for referrals, elements around care coordination, having great importance. Also, elements that help on the patient and family caregiver side. So some of those are just our demographic data sets to help understand and meet the patient where she is. Some of them are about the care planning and coordination process. And then for all of them together is sort of a shared decision-making team. We recognize the importance of bringing in data from patients, from care team members, so that bidirectional access, elements that might have a bidirectional component to them, patient-reported outcomes, patient journey health data, social determinants of health. So this is sort of illustrating thinking about this not just from a maturity of standards perspective, but a criticality of need approach. And we understood that, and so we flagged this, that it's important to think about those needs from other perspectives too. So payers, public health, researchers, other core stakeholders. This isn't meant to be an exclusive list. This is meant to just illustrate a way that we sort of looked at and thought about making recommendations on U.S. CDI. Stephen, do you want me to pause here, or do you want me to go into the framework that we used back in 2015?
Well, why don't we pause for any questions, and I think to acknowledge what's going on in the chat here, which is, I think specifically Hans raised the question and this goes to test 2B, just to be clear, but Hans raised the question as to whether elevating something into US CDI or really elevating something to level 2 so that it can be selected for inclusion in US CDI should require both a terminology standard and a technical specification or implementation guide, sort of pushing it, you know, more in the direction of standards than less so. And I don't know, Hans, whether you wanted to add color to that comment, and maybe we'll give Al a chance to respond.
Yes, and I think it's, as Leslie also indicated, it's a little bit of a yin-yang push and pull that we're trying to achieve what goes in that has a reasonable chance to make it in US CDI version next, in this case version 3. And therefore, I would agree is that having for everything a full set of not only vocabulary but implementation guide at the time that it starts to move into level 2 might not be necessary, but there needs to be a reasonable understanding that by the time it gets to US CDI V3 definition, that there is. And the rationale behind that is that US CDI is being used for certification. It's used for other topics as well. And we talked about this before. It is used for that. And therefore, in order to be certified, unless one accepts a variety of means by which things are being interoperated, is that if that's okay, but unless the intent is to get consistent about that, then you must have by that time a standard to be able to be certified or real-world testing or otherwise against that. So that's the rationale. So I'm not saying is that at the time that we are suggesting and proposing it to go into level 2, everything must be there. But we need to have a reasonable idea and intent that by putting it there, it can get over the hump to get there. We can get it done, and it has a reasonable chance by the time USCDI V3 is being defined, it's there.
Thank you. Yeah, and then Clem had a sort of a counter comment in the chat regarding that sometimes asking too much in terms of implementation guides is just that, and it creates more work than is necessary. So I think, again, there's a balance, there's a sweet spot between requiring more and less specification on these.
Yeah, could I just elaborate so that, you know, the current structures we have could send an awful lot of what people want. There's a tendency to overmodel sometimes. So one could make a special specification for complete blood count, but we don't. It all fits in the general lab structure, as do most clinical observations. So I think we just got to be careful about overmodeling. It creates more work on the development side, and it creates more work on user side.
Great. Abby, your hand's up.
Yeah, on the first bullet, I'm just wondering if there's a way to, I think the intent is there, but the wording doesn't maybe have the gravity that it could, excuse the pun, the physician to specialty care and continuity of care and care coordination. It would be great to see the importance of the mental health referrals and the mental health components and the community. And I know that's part of what is meant by continuity of care, but to have specialty care called out like that really reinforces that specialty care. And in honesty, it needs to be equally mental health and community partners as well as specialty care. So I think the wording there, for me, I would love to see more specifics related to what I just said.
Well, and just to be clear, Abby, I mean, this is Mark's wording, UCSF's wording, with regard to, you know, how they're interpreting this. For us as a task force, you know, we need to think about how we translate this into recommendations to HITACH. And again, those recommendations are on the going to be on the leveling process and the prioritization process. So I guess as we think about this, think about how these observations would turn into specific recommendations.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks. I guess, Mark, I'd just offer it for you to consider then.
Thank you. For our purposes, this was meant to just illustrate a perspective, and I agree that for the task force's work, it needs to be inclusive, and it wouldn't just focus on in the way that this particular slide looks like.
So, Mark, maybe you can go ahead and share with us how your prior work group worked on this and modeled a prioritization schema. In that case, you were looking at specific use cases as opposed to data elements or data classes, but I think that the prioritization approach is helpful.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. So next slide, please. So when the draft interoperability roadmap came out in early 2015, there were 50 use cases attached to it, and the Advanced Health Models and Meaningful Use Workgroup was tasked by the HIT Policy Committee to develop some priorities among those 50 use cases. So I'm sharing what that framework was for back then, but it illustrates perhaps a creative approach that we could use here with some tweaking. And I will also add, I'm sort of describing what we did back then. It's meant to be illustrative. This task force could tweak it and change some of the criteria as well. So it's not being presented as something in concrete. So in trying to figure out how to prioritize those use cases, we looked at four broad dimensions or domains. What was the potential impact of the use case? And we were looking at the triple aim. How much did it meet national programmatic needs? For example, the national quality strategy. What was the operational readiness of the use case? And what was the impact across the range of beneficiaries? So not just one beneficiary group, but you'll see that the range of stakeholders. It was a pretty complicated spreadsheet, which I'm happy to spare you from this slide deck and this meeting. But each work group member then sort of rated across those, gave their ratings. Those ratings were aggregated, and it present when you looked at the aggregation across the different work group members, you saw some very interesting insights about the use cases. So in talking with Stephen and Leslie, one idea is that a similar framework could be used to evaluate level two data elements for inclusion in a version, say version three. Could also be used to identify level one data elements that are getting a lot of love from task force members and because of the ratings might suggest that they deserve some additional consideration, even though they have been preliminarily categorized as level one. So a little bit of the detail, if you go to the next slide, please. So impact, we looked at health care and cost or value. So I've changed the word use case to data element just to make it a little more relevant for us. But for example, on care, does the data element make the healthcare more patient-centered, reliable, accessible, safe? Does it reduce cost? Does it improve value? So sort of taking the national indicia of critical impact and applying them here to the data elements. But that's not the only factor. It's not the only dimension. So to the next slide. Also an important dimension, next slide please, is sort of meeting national programmatic needs. And at the time we used two areas. We used the National Quality Strategy and the six domains within the National Quality Strategy. And we also used the Nationwide Interoperability Roadmap and its three phases. So there was a 2015 to 2017 phase about just helping the basic exchange, sending, finding, receiving, and using. A second phase about exchanging and care coordination, and a third phase about the learning health system. So I didn't add all of that in here. This just illustrates ways in which you could take each of these domains and think about a data element or a use case. And it might be important to one thing, not so important to another. So you get the whole of the understanding about how the data element fits into the national ecosystem. Next slide, please. Operational readiness, also a very important dimension. We broke it down into four areas, sort of what's the business and cultural readiness for an element, the technical environment, which the area I think we've had a lot of discussion about already on this task force. The stakeholder effort, what does it take to get it up and ready? And the policy environment, is it fitting a particular policy need that's already been articulated? Is it something that has not really been discussed much. So again, looking at operational readiness as a dimension and different subdomains of operational readiness to consider. And then the last slide, please. A reminder to those work group members to think about the different stakeholders and there that we may have more to add here. But to look at the impact across the range. So it's not just what's the impact for the health professional, it's also the impact for the individual, the impact for the public, impact for payers. So just considering all of these, and again, a data element or a use case might have great impact for one, less for another. Take it all into consideration in evaluating for the nation as a whole. What to recommend as a priority and perhaps what not to recommend as a priority. So again, this is what we used back then. It's presented here just for illustrative purposes about a way to factor in a broader range of considerations that I think I've heard on these task force phone calls and to allow us all to rate them and consider them. Have I left anything out, Stephen or Leslie?
No, that is great, Mark. I really appreciate your sharing this with us and bringing forward the hard work of a prior task force to inform our discussion. Sorry, Les.
It also is really, it was very helpful when we did this in the Meaningful Use Committee to even guide discussion, even though we did some rating. The discussions about the beneficiary net impact was very, very meaningful. And each stakeholder group got a chance to talk it through. And we were able to see where the congruence was, where there were three groups impacted positively or all five. And it really did help us to set prioritization and also to drive discussion. So thank you, Mark.
So One thing that I'll observe about this, Mark, is you guys put together really, as you said, a complex and detailed rating system that then was also supported by a weighting system both within and between the various dimensions that were considered. I would just have to ask you and perhaps the folks from ONC, how much was that actually utilized? I mean, you were looking at, you said, 50-plus use cases and prioritization for which ones were going to get more love, as you say, from ONC. You know, we're looking at potentially hundreds of submitted data elements. How helpful was this framework, and how much was it actually put to use?
Is that a question for ONC or for me, Stephen?
Well, I if anyone knows.
I'll say for the work group's perspective, and Leslie, you may have comments to that as well, it was very helpful. There was I have spared you on this call, but there was a presentation by the work group to the policy committee. It was very useful for their deliberations. We did not present on everything. The process within the work group allowed us to sort the wheat from the chaff. And so where it was especially useful was in spotting the priorities and having a discussion around that sort of subset that really was closer to the top and trying to figure out where to say yes and where to say no. I think that was definitely useful to the work group. My recollection, it was very useful to the policy committee. Al may be able to say more about ONC's perspective on that.
I think it was also useful when people submitted an idea or a use case, having a common framework, it allowed for some due diligence. And so there was, we were all speaking about the same content items, more than I think the laborious looking at, you know, every single data element every single time. It was a due diligence process that we benefited from, I think, as more than anything.
And then I'll just add that we've discussed this a little bit over the last couple of days at ONC. I am not aware of an analysis of the long-term impact of those, of this framework on how things rolled out over the last 6 years. So I would have to talk to some more folks at ONC to really say that fact alone, I think, is indicative of a little bit of what impact it may or may not have had, though. I just haven't seen any follow-up analysis of the impact of this.
I think what I would observe, Al, is that really the underlying principles here of, you know, technical readiness, operational readiness, evaluating the impact on stakeholders of various stripes, are really reflected in the submission evaluation criteria that ONC has implemented to evaluate submissions to USCDI. I mean, so I think, as Mark said, you know, this engendered discussion, shared appreciation of these various dimensions. And I think, you know, practically speaking, the detailed level of analysis on an item-by-item basis is really laborious. I mean, it's really a lot of work. And as we go from the, whatever the number was, 130 submissions that you guys got in V2 you know, to whatever we're going to end up seeing in V3. I mean, there's going to be so much need identified, and you guys really do need to have a workable process for leveling and prioritizing what's to be brought forward. So I think this is great work, but I do, even if it wasn't exactly translated into the process at ONC, I think it clearly, you know, you can see how it has informed that process. Abby? Abby, your hands up?
Yep. Sorry, just trying to get my mute off. I'm just going to say that I understand the importance and the practicality of what we are talking about. I also would just like to make the case and state the obvious that what the ONC puts forward will set the tone for the rest of the country. And some of the things that we are, meaning Ochin or myself, are really advocating for are probably not as well developed as some of the more medical related data and the standards around that. And I understand the perspective related to the practicality of putting forward things that are more developed and more mature. But we will set the tone, and we need to set a tone that says that there must be equity related to healthcare, and the mental health and behavioral health and the social factors related to some of our most at-risk patients are not as well developed, and they can't be left behind another 10 years just because they're not as far along on the continuum related to standards. So I guess I would just implore us to find a balance and to really consider that if we set the tone, it will dramatically change and drive the agenda nationally related to standardization of data in those areas. Because if we don't do it, I don't know who else will.
Well put. Thank you. All right. So again, the purpose of inviting Mark to share this and discuss it here was really to help to orient us and to invite input from other task force members and from the public. Those of you in the public, we'd love to hear from you, you know, when we go to public comment, as to how we want to suggest to ONC that they perhaps evolve the prioritization criteria. Remembering that the established criteria are that the data elements in level 2, that there's a significant gap I identified in the prior version of USCDI, that the data is supported by certification, it involves modest technical standards development, and again, this could be on both the implementation guide and the terminology, and that it's a modest aggregate lift. All of which seem, to me, at least as an individual, perfectly valid. I think one of those criteria that we have been dancing around for some time now is the question of level 2. You know, are we really, you know, are we as a task force, is ONC committed to prioritizing simply amongst level 2 elements? And if so, you know, do we have the right criteria for bringing things into level 2? Or, you know, is there a practical role for data elements that fit the level 1 definition to be, you know, pulled forward, perhaps, you know, even quote prematurely into USCDI? And I think, you know, Andy's not here, so I'll just channel him a little bit. I mean, he keeps coming back to the word core. You know, is an element really core to nationwide interoperability if, in fact, it's technical or operational maturity falls below the requirements for level 2? So I think we got a little sideways around the whole tonometry issue, where we had people saying, no, it's you know, it's a level 1, or in fact, there's something, you know, it's also at a comment level, sort of at both level 1 and comment level when you look at OnDeck. And yet, Clem has repeatedly made the very cogent argument that it's being exchanged, it's ready for exchange, it should be included. I'll note that Clem did share that perspective at HITACH, and HITACH did not propose that as an amendment to our recommendation. So it's still sitting out there, for future consideration. But Al, you made a comment a week or two ago that, that ONC might consider level one data elements for inclusion in USCDI. And I'm really hoping we can clarify this and put it to rest one way or the other. I think what you said was if interaction with the submitter and or public commentary made it clear that it had been misleveled, that it got published as a level one, but really it ends up with additional input that it meets the criteria for level two, and that the reason it would be brought forward is not all the way from a frank level one, but really it was a level two all along. We miscategorized it, and therefore we're bringing it from level two into the next version. Do I have that right, or is there some subtlety where you believe that a true level one element might be brought forward into the next version?
No, I actually think you got that exactly right, Stephen. There's that and one more thing, but it really is a matter of and there's a time frame for that reconsideration of a level one data element, and that time frame is prior to the drafting of the version, not sometime after, 2 months, 6 months later. But that's exactly right. We may have missed a detail. Maybe a detail hadn't been provided in the original submission, and that's the other part of it. It could have been added, or when somebody sees the data element submission, they may have additional information themselves unrelated to the original use case that would actually demonstrate more maturity, more readiness of that data element, and they can do that through the comment process or from direct collaboration with the submitter in order to improve the quality, if you will, of the submission. And then at that point, presuming it happens before we've drafted version two or version next, in that situation, something that was originally determined to be a level one becomes a level two, and therefore at that point is in the mix for consideration.
And so as things evolve in standards and evolve over the years, it's part of our process then to first validate in this version next as we consider level one and level two, are those still defined correctly given the evolution? Is that part of our role, or is that a process separate?
I think that, just the checking, evaluating, getting a recommendation from the HITACH and the task force about what we consider a level two. Hans brought up a point about a clarification about a standards development organization validated implementation guide, and that may not be the right language for the evaluation criteria for level two. Perhaps an early ballot, it may be early balloted, but it's not really ready for prime time yet. That may not be a level two data element then, if it's got a more immature early ballot as opposed to something that's, I think the term is published. If it's published, then maybe that is more mature and more appropriate for level two. So some of those criteria for the level decisions as well, definitely something we're looking for feedback on.
Okay. And we have comments from Grace and Daniel. Grace?
I guess I'm just trying, as I'm listening along, I'm struggling with the fact that advanced directives and end-of-life care, which pertain to everyone, healthy, chronically ill providers, anyone in the ecosystem, because no next moment is guaranteed, but it's still at a level one. So how do we, my understanding is that there just aren't enough standards in place to move that forward, though there is progress. Is that really what the holdup end of life
that
care?
That could be, to use your word, that could be what the holdup is. It could be a lack of consensus about which standards to use. That certainly happens sometimes. We went through that when we dialed back the requirements for smoking status. because nobody could agree on what the right questions to ask to determine smoking status. There just wasn't consensus about exactly what should be determined. So it could be the lack of standardization. It could be lack of consensus around standardization. It could be lack of broad applicability, or it could be lack of just overall standards development. It could be any of those things.
So then what I'm hearing is we are going to look and see if definitions of level one and level two are still accurate. And if the task force has comments to that, that would be welcomed as part of our process for review. And to Grace's point, in the comments around advanced directives, there were comments were very specific about the standards and in place today to do that. And so I think it is worthwhile for us to review that, correct? So,
well, if there's a
so, Al, that,
so not I wouldn't. So that would be certainly be an area to discuss whether there could be a disagreement, like Stephen called it mislabeled, which I'm okay with that representation. It could be that it looked we missed it by didn't recognizing what was stated as a standard. That's certainly a possibility that we'd be, and that's during the initial evaluation portion. Not like after we publish V2. We want public input before we publish the draft. We want public input as soon as it's published on the OnDeck system. And in some cases, we've gotten some significant feedback from not only the submitter but also other stakeholders on other submissions. And in some cases, that could have changed the level and change the consideration for version two. But certainly looking at it, we want to try and get as many people involved as early as possible in the process, so that if that sort of consideration was looked at in October or November of last year after the submissions were put in, it could have had an impact.
But going forward for version next, Al, then we have that included in our process, correct?
Yeah, for sure. We okay. The but it's kind of on this it's on the stakeholder, the submitter, to try and get other
correct.
People to weigh in on it. That's it. That and so to get it possibly reevaluated, possibly, but maybe not.
Okay.
But it also yeah. So that's all of that is fair game as far as recommendations go.
But again, I think your point, Al, is that the leveling must be done, and our consideration is based on the leveling that's done prior to the publication of the draft.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And Daniel has a comment.
That's really helpful.
Yeah.
Daniel?
Piggybacking on Grace and Al's comments, I think it's important to note that we're early in the process of this evaluation, meaning it's not 100% precise. And while ONC is doing its best to establish the framework, it's not as if it's entirely scientific, right? and so I think these are great comments for shaping that process. What we've set up is the idea that effectively anyone can propose a data class or a data element. We want that barrier to be quite low. But as Al pointed out, there's actually a significant responsibility as far as the data gathering, the marshaling of community support, understanding really the significance and characterizing it appropriately. And in some cases, you know, where the proposer might not be fully in the best position to do that, and therefore a larger community effort is needed to appropriately or more accurately level something. And I think what this discussion is illustrating is that there are cases maybe where that initial leveling was done with the best information available at hand, and yet still then that we as a task force come in later and say, well, hey, but wait. And that's the whole process is trying to sort of figure out how to move that upstream so that it can happen more rapidly and be appropriately considered when it's necessary at the time to publish the new version. So I think we have a challenge to use the criteria, but also gather as much of the supporting information as possible without forcing each submitter to have to take on that entire responsibility for the lifetime of that data element until it makes it to official USCDI.
And Dan, thank you for that. You were almost precisely channeling the input of the prior USCDI task force. Again, we want a very low barrier to entry. We want to get things on the table. Grace and Leslie, for example, are advocating for disability data, you know, which hasn't been brought forward yet. We want to encourage the community to bring items forward. But it's going to be more than the submitter that will need to be involved, you know, to get things all the way to level two, to get them to where they're really ready to be added. They need to be quite mature. I mean, like it or not, you know, it doesn't do anyone any good for us to throw things into the sink if they're not ready, you know, to be truly used. It would, in fact, you know, lower the value of USCDI as a whole were we to bring things forward based on, you know, advocacy that we're not truly prepared for access, exchange, and use. So we got this slide up from the homework. And again, I believe that our first task, or our next task, I should say, as a task force, is to look at these five bullets and to see, you know, obviously, you know, next version. So where it says V1, it'll say V2. But what would be the, you know, any changes that we feel would be indicated to these prioritization criteria, supplements, you know, more bullets, change in wording, change in focus. That's really what I had hoped that we would start to get on the table today. We have about 10 minutes or so till public comment, so have at it. Hands up, please. While the hands are coming up, I'll just say, you know, we're part of a bigger process. We have an opportunity to impact that process. And it's meant to be a repeated process. You know, it's not like any given annual cycle is the last chance for any data element or class. The things that are not brought forward in V2 will have, you know, another opportunity to make it in V3, et cetera. Grace?
As I'm looking at these bullet points, I keep going back to the COVID-19 framework. We didn't anticipate having successful vaccines, for example. How does the pandemic shape the prioritization? Because I'm not sure if it's emphasized enough, and it may impact one or two things that might be closely tied with other data classes or elements under consideration.
I think Abby, do you want to put voice to your comment in the chat?
Yeah, it just takes me a second to get off mute. I feel torn because typically I would be responding in the exact same way as these priorities are. But I think what I have been learning for the last couple of years, especially the last year, is that we have not been in the practice, nor have we emphasized some of the elements related to public health, related to mental health, and related to equity issues. As a country, we've been predominantly managed by a traditional medical approach to the moving of data. So those parts of our industry are the farthest behind. And that's what we encountered during COVID. And I don't know how to rectify in my head the pragmatic and practicality of moving forward with things that are more well-developed. And the fact that we're actually suffering under the challenge that the things we need the most are the least well-developed. And I don't know how to rectify that when I look at this prioritization criteria, which on the surface it seems completely reasonable. But if we do this, we're going to be perpetuating the issues of that we've actually been suffering under for the last 2 years. And we're consistently creating data for a commercial population because it's easier and more well-developed. And it is actually not the commercial population, except for end-of-life issues. It is not the commercial population that is actually some of the most at-risk and some of the most expensive care that we have as a country. I don't know how to rectify that in my head.
This comes up significantly because when you look at the data underserved, then none of these elements would make the data underserved people more served. And there is
exactly.
a tension there because there is no one organization that shepherds the needs of the data underserved through standards bodies. And so it is a perpetual cycle that makes
right.
those underserved actually get a wider gap and not a gap that's reduced. And we've talked about this offline and wondering, how do we rectify it? Is it this need exists and has been highlighted by USCDI process and others, but where is it appropriate to take this idea or this underserved gap that we have, where do we take it to resolve it? Because to Stephen's point, you look at these priorities and they seem very well thought out. And yes, if we're looking at data elements, they have to be defined, as Clem just said, or we have gibberish. But the fact of the matter is, if no one's sponsoring the underserved gibberish, then it continues. And so I would love to get some guidance on this, or to what we had hoped to get when we asked HITACH for guidance on prioritization of stakeholders, is if the data underserved stakeholder were elevated in interest, that would somewhat weight the lack of standards to be not as important as the stressing the data underserved. And I see Mark has his hand up, and I'd love to get Stephen and Al's comments about this as well.
I've been disconnected by the network. I lost connection. But I'd like
go
to
ahead, Clem.
Well,
no,
there's a
ahead.
Couple things. Yeah, one is about the end of life and the death. We do now have DNR, I think, as an order to be picked up. But it's a tough problem because there's no single holder and a reliable holder of it. There's been proposals that where people would put it so you could find it. So that's a big complicated problem. Regarding the underserved, the problem is no one said what you really want. Say something specific that we can deal with. But just saying there's a problem and wringing your hands doesn't get us anywhere. Be specific.
Thank you, Mark.
So what has struck me, what continues to strike me about these criteria is that they sort of build on the status quo. They take a look at where we are and say we'll make incremental change. I'm speaking a little overbroad here, apologies. But one of the questions we're talking about right now, and one of the questions I've been asking for the past years is, where do we need to be? So we have examples of that, like the HITECH Act in 2009 says we cannot continue with a paper-based record system. Where do we need to be? And we figured out a way to move forward. And I think I will think about a way to articulate that. I don't have it right now, but I think we need to add to these criteria about where the national ecosystem needs to be.
So, thank you. Go ahead, Al.
It's something that's been kind of stuck in my craw a little bit as this discussion has gone on. There's a difference between these prioritization criteria, which were designed to help ONC select from the submitted data elements for addition to USCDI version 2. And some of the concerns that were raised by Grace and Abby and Leslie are about what data elements should be submitted to ONDEC. And that's a different, I don't disagree that there are things that are not well represented and not, there's not the advocate. And the advocate is the one that is going to submit, is going to do the work to develop the standards around these data elements and then do the submission to the OnDeck system. That's a different gap than what we're talking about when we're talking about the prioritization criteria that ONC uses to put something into the next version of US CDI.
No, that's a really good point, Al. And again, we and the US CDI process as a whole cannot fix all of the ills of healthcare and healthcare data. It's just not going to happen. But what I'm hearing as I listen to this is really what Mark and Leslie's task force got at earlier, the importance of recognizing national programmatic needs, as it was characterized there, but really priorities, underrepresented data, underserved stakeholders. How does ONC, working within the national ecosystem with CDC and CMS and everybody else, how can we or should we try to institute some sort of affirmative action, for want of a better term, that would allow us to bring things forward? And I think we got at that in our presentations. We identified areas that were not all the way there that we felt really realistically needed some more work by HL7. And now that discussion has begun with HL7, their team, and how can we do that? But that notion of advocating for and pulling things up by the bootstraps. And I wonder if there is another bullet that could be added to this list of prioritization criteria that would get at that. I don't think we'll have our chance to weigh in on the leveling criteria. But let's just take as gospel that something needs to be level 2 to be brought forward. And then we can work on what allows something to be level 2. I think clearly a significant gap in the prior version, sort of goes without saying, right? We're going to respond to gaps. We need to understand what supported by means in the certification process and understand where that process is evolving so that we can stay in concert with that. If there needs to be development, there needs to be development. But somewhere in there, it sounds like we want to have advocacy, identification, and we've mentioned public health, mental health, equity, data underserved, pandemic response. Those are all sort of appropriate categories, and that may change year to year, kind of what are the hot topics that need to be addressed. But interested to hear how people think we might approach the advocacy question and how we could phrase that as a prioritization criteria, and whether that changes this list from a list of ands to an or, because I think all of these are, you need to be level 2 and represent a gap and et cetera. So we're gonna go to public comment now. I do hope we have some public comment, and then we'll come back to think about how we're gonna move forward.
Great. Operator, can we please open up the lines for public comments?
Operator, can you read the text for the public
comments? Yes, I'm sorry. I had my mic muted. If you would like to make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for a participant choosing speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for questions. There are no questions at this time.
Thank you so much. And again, we continue to invite the public to contribute in this venue, and look forward to comments when they're available. So, you know, in the last few minutes, I think we've had a pretty broad-ranging discussion. Mark has presented a lot of deep work that was done by an earlier task force facing a similar problem. And I think that, you know, we have certain parameters within which we need to function. And again, one of our tasks is to provide recommendations regarding the prioritization process. Another task, you know, and as Al said, that's one step. You know, the first step is the submission system, how to encourage, support, and even advocate for submissions. The next is the leveling process, and how we make sure that we get that right. How, if at all, should the leveling process be tweaked to support advocacy for underrepresented data and stakeholders? And then the third is the prioritization process itself. So I think that, you know, our homework for next week is to really, really lose some sleep on this. Really, you know, think deeply about how we can manifest the kind of advocacy and affirmative, you know, action that we have, you know, all I think agreed is appropriate. Does it go into OnDeck? Does it go into the leveling process, and or does it belong in the prioritization process? So I hope that all of you can come forward with ideas as to how we can do that. Please share them with the co-chairs at your earliest opportunity, because I'm frankly a little bit at a crossroads here personally. You know, as co-chair, I mean, how do we move this forward within the opportunity that we have? So I'm very interested in all of your thinking, and please put voice to it now and/or between now and our next meeting. Les, do you have any thoughts?
No, I agree. I think we are at a crossroads. I do love your suggestion of there's some ands and there's some ors on these prioritization. And if it's a matter of scope, for instance, where we select something that meets the data underserved as an or, but it's a minimal amount so that the industry has a chance to catch up, to make the standards for that. But I think that your suggestion of there is an and an or, and then how do we prioritize within that or, is a really, really good way to look at this, because otherwise the gaps just get bigger.
I'll also add that we do hope, and Al, I hope that it can be accomplished this week, to have a meeting with Mickey and Steve and perhaps Elise and the team, to get the input from ONC. I think we've brought ourselves and our thinking to a good level to engage in that discussion. The co-chairs will have that discussion and come back here. I'm not sure that's going to be appropriate for a full task force dialogue, but you know, who knows? Maybe it will be. With that, we are at time. We don't have hands up. I really want to thank everyone for your thoughtful engagement. And again, go think about these things and bring us your suggestions in anticipation of our ongoing discussion next week. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.